Hi, Josh and Drew. I have been dealing with GAD and panic disorder probably since I was 17, I can remember. I lost my mom about 2 years ago to brain cancer, and we were very, very close. So that has been definitely hard to battle and to manage. But through your podcast, it has definitely helped me in so many areas, more than you guys could know. I just recently got resensitized with my anxiety just through triggers and life experiences. And I woke up this morning to find out my dad's in the hospital with pneumonia, and he's probably not going to make it. So I guess I just want to know, Josh, I know through your own personal experience, how you coped with anxiety around grief, and how you process that, I guess. And is it any different from the steps that we take through panic disorder and all the other sensations that we get with anxiety attacks? This morning's really rough, but I got up and I took a shower. So I guess you could say I did it anyway, kind of, through my anxiety. But I guess any advice or help with this would be great. Appreciate all that you guys do. Love you guys. Thank you.
Welcome to Disordered. This is episode 62, entitled Anxiety and Grief. Thank you for the question, Senderina, for such a raw and emotional and honest question. This is a much requested topic, and we're going to talk about it today. This question was sent in several weeks ago, so hopefully when you turn it on Friday, that you'll be able to get something from this. I'm Joshua Fletcher, also known as Anxiety Josh. I'm a psychotherapist who specializes in anxiety disorders. I'm based in Manchester in the UK, author of And How Does That Make You Feel? And co-host of Disordered.
And I am Drew Linsalata. I am a therapist in training in New York, also specializing in anxiety and anxiety disorders. One of the co-hosts of this podcast, an author and whatnot, and a former sufferer of these problems for many years of my life. And this was a tough one to listen to. This question was really hard, very raw. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing the vulnerability. And this is a subject we need to talk about. It's a subject that, I'll be honest, it makes me feel uncomfortable as well, because of, you know, grief is something that I walk around with. But, you know, we practice what we preach, and we're going to talk about it. And we'll also talk about how grief overlaps with resensitization and anxiety disorders and stuff. And we'll try and cover it the best we can. Interestingly, my anxiety disorder started when I was pre-grieving. So the person who sent this in, obviously that lost their mum to cancer, which is usually a prolonged thing. And mine started when I was losing my brother. And obviously, with an anxious mind, it can be quite frustrating, because you feel very selfish, and then there's all the stress going on, and you're worrying about your family members, etc. Your stress jug builds up, and I'm going to talk a lot about the stress jug today in relation to grief.
You mentioned, sort of pre-grieving when your brother was ill. Like, that's a thing. Anticipatory grief is a thing.
It's one of the main things that filled up my stress jug, Drew. So, obviously, and it's just a maelstrom of different emotions that fill up the stress jug, because you've got hope. You need hope. You always have to have hope. And if you're in a similar situation, never lose that hope. But you've got raw, cynical pragmatism, and then you've got hope. You've got love. You've got grief. You've got to try to prepare for something. And there's loads of unknowns and what ifs around the corner.
Yeah,
that fills things up. And then the grief itself, which overfills your stress jug, but then weirdly kind of makes you feel emptier in the inside. When you do the exposure work and you're teaching the amygdala that, you know, this, I don't need to fear anymore, what's left is that when you start to do well with your anxiety disorder, you then faced with the other emotions. Did you find that, Drew, like anxiety disorders will just consume your attention and your emotions constantly? And when you start to do well with an anxiety disorder, there's a whole queue of other emotions that have just been waiting.
Yeah, I found that to be definitely true. When my, unfortunately, the losses that I experienced are the people closest to me happened when I was in the middle of the struggle, and I was sort of medicating it away. So I wasn't really having a lot of emotions at the time. So I did not have responses to like losing my grandparents, whom I was very close to. But then years later, I was no longer on the medication and I was doing all my recovery work, and that stuff came out in full force. So I was in like delayed grieving for the loss of people that were so huge in my life and played such a huge role in my childhood. It came out years later and I was completely blindsided by that. I did not expect that.
Yeah. It's like they get queued up, isn't it?
Yeah. They did not go away. They were waiting.
And one of the biggest fears that people in our community have is when they go through like huge life events, a lot of their core beliefs that we challenge is that what if I can't cope? Mm-hmm. What if I can't cope when things become overwhelming? Mm-hmm. You can, and you've coped with literally everything life has thrown at you.
Yeah.
That's not going to end today, you know? But often we get asked about grief. It's like, what do I do? And as the person asked, how do I process this? Now, where do we start with that? How do you process grief? Is it similar to processing and, you know, the fear and the misinterpretation of an anxious response when it comes to an anxiety disorder?
I think that's such an excellent question, and it's very nuanced. One of the things that always surprises me, and I've had the privilege, I think, to learn from our community when you get to listen to them, is sometimes we run the risk of like thinking, oh, this cool like anxiety disorder recovery thing is a thing that I apply to everything. So like, do I float in, how do I float through? I've had people ask me, how am I supposed to float through this grief? Well, I don't. Like, you know, I think maybe the first thing I would say is be careful of the assertion that there's a technique for grieving, like you would use sort of techniques to overcome disordered anxiety. I don't think there is. It just is. Grief just is. It's a powerful experience. It feels terrible. It will drag you through all kinds of different states. And that's just the way it is. So the first thing would be, I'm in for a ride here.
Yes.
But that's part of being human.
You're in for a ride, definitely. I can tell you how not to process grief.
That's it, right.
Although my own inner Craig the critic would say, this is not how you do it. But then my inner compassionate voice would say, this is what a therapist told me. You got through it. You know, I was making poor choices when I was grieving, you know, drinking and growing up because I didn't want to feel what I wanted to feel. Mm-hmm. Drinking heavily and making other poor hedonistic choices and just, going to bed at like 5 a.m. and sleeping all day and things like that. And inner Craig, the critic's like, that's not how you process grief. But then compassionate Josh now is like, well, yeah, ideally we don't do that. But at the same time, you know, you were hit with a maelstrom of emotions and traumatic events. So, you know, I'm not saying go and do that. Definitely don't. Mm-hmm. But what I am trying to say is that there's no scripted way to do it. What I would advise, though, is try not to avoid feelings. That's where it does avoid. I was trying to avoid feelings, and so therefore the process was longer.
Yeah.
And I was avoiding feelings, trying to numb myself, you know, but they, like Drew said, when he was on antidepressants and stuff, they wait and queued up.
Yep.
You know, there's no set way to do it. Sometimes we hear this with a lot with anxiety recovery is like, am I doing the right things?
Yeah.
With grief, no, you've just got to strap in. Some days you're going to feel like shit. Some days you're going to feel empty. Some days you might smile and laugh and then feel guilty for that. Why? Why am I laughing a week after I've lost this person? Mm. It sometimes you feel things very intensely and then not at all. You know,
Oh, I'm sorry, Josh, I stepped on you, but sometimes it's really hard because you can't compartmentalize yourself. Like, we are whole people, right? And things like get bunched up together and they bleed into each other. But sometimes I think it's a helpful thing to consider is I do have to try to compartmentalize, at least conceptually, my emotions and my fear of my emotions. Like I'm having a lot of emotions. Oh yeah. And that's right. I'm also having this other problem where I fear my internal state, or I see it as dangerous, or I see it as something that I cannot allow. So if you can always keep that there are those two things in mind at the same time, it can be helpful to stay out of the trap of, because things like, you know, how am I going to do this without, how am I going to do this without my dad, for instance? How am I going to do this without my mom is a common thing for anybody to fear and worry about. I lost my partner. I lost somebody close. How am I supposed to go on without my biggest cheerleader in life or whatever? Anybody would ask that question. And then the person with an anxiety disorder asks a second question. How am I supposed to deal with not being able to feel like I can deal with life without my whoever? Insert person here.
Yeah, it's very normal to have existential thoughts, because grief taps into how you see life. Grief is, particularly when it's someone close to you, is part of the framework of how you exist. It will tap into things about your own personal philosophies about what life is. Maybe you're a person of faith and that's challenging. Maybe you're someone who struggles to develop some kind of framework, an existentialist. And when you lose someone who is such a huge part of your life, don't be surprised if that threat response is then telling you, no, you need to find an answer for this missing puzzle piece that's no longer here. Mm-hmm. I still have that now, I think, you know, and grief does change you forever, not in a way that makes the anxiety worse. Mm-hmm. It will just change. Change doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It will be there. It gets complex because we try not to allow space for anxiety disorders, rumination, trying to find the miracle thought, trying to get rid of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And with grief, you've got to flip it on its head. Actually, do make space for it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember starting seeing some progress when I'd sit in the park and I'd just be like, you know what? I'm going to sit in the park and just feel what I have to feel. Maybe some of that's even fear of fear and panic, mm-hmm. whatever. I'm just going to sit and feel whatever I need to feel. And that really helped. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. That's a tough one too, because people who are afraid to feel things spend so much time trying to not trigger themselves. So that's almost like diametrically opposed. They're like, well, I probably need to sit at my kitchen table and think about my grandma because I mm-hmm. want to, but it makes me feel horrible, but I want to, and it's part of the process, but I don't want to do that because that might make me too anxious. So I think sometimes the anxiety disorder can say, no, don't grieve. Don't do that. You know, we have mm-hmm. to lock that down somehow, and it's not being fair, but again, you're in for a ride. So yeah, you might get triggered into some extra anxiety if you do those things. But one of the most valuable things I ever heard somebody tell me was my friend Jessica Seidner, who was on The Anxious Truth, my other podcast, a long time ago. She talked about losing her husband. She had to tell stories about him. She wanted people to use his name because people would not want to say, you know, like, don't say anything about it because you don't want to trigger the person. No, I want to talk about it. So helpful to hear a grieving person say, no, I needed to talk about him. And I wanted to tell stories and I wanted people to ask me, but you might get triggered by that. That's true. Can't do anything about it. What are you going to do?
Yeah. It's that emotional conservatism bit that we have, isn't it? Where we're considerate. We don't want loved ones to feel awkward or re-experience that pain. If particularly they're presenting as happy. But at the same time, it's also actually, I don't like, you know, a lot of people just don't really like talking about grief, or they're emotionally conservative, you know, showing emotions is weakness. No, it's not. I started to feel better when, you know, shedding tears sometimes every day, and that's okay. You know, also it was a double exposure, because one of my fears was, what if all this emotion gets so much that I have a psychotic break or something?
Yeah.
Or a breakdown. It's like, no, It doesn't.
We're built for that, really. But it's interesting because before you said the experience will change you. And right away I'm thinking, oh, we better talk about that because people listening will hear, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean it changes me? Because they will be afraid that such a huge emotional experience will break them. Because that anxious brain is saying there's a breaking point. You have to hang on tight or you'll break. But yeah, we're designed to feel those things.
Yeah, you're still you.
Right.
Yeah, you're still you. It doesn't change you. Because anxious people, their threat response is like, change? No.
Right.
I don't want change.
Or no, I'm fragile. My mind is fragile. Like it might break. So.
Yeah. It's interesting about change, isn't it? Because it's everything that every person with an anxiety disorder craves, but also fears.
And fears.
Because anxiety can become weirdly the ever-present comforting constant. What does it mean? What do you mean things are going to change? No, they changed for me, in worldview, my life, my priorities, things like that change.
Yeah.
Also as well, and weirdly as well with the grief, particularly when my brother was unwell, I became angry and actually used that anger in my exposures. Mm-hmm. And actually was helpful, weirdly. Yeah, I remember being really angry and I had nowhere to channel my anger. And then so
you put it there.
I put it there, yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
And almost like, it's nice. It came up with my own personal therapy, but it was like when I hate this word, like relapse, when I was resensitized, like the person stated before, I found it more difficult the next time because in the first time I had a purpose. You talk a lot about value-driven recovery. My value was that I need to get better to look after my brother. Second time after he'd passed, I was resensitized and I struggled to do it for myself because I had survivor guilt. I had an inner critic, Greg the critic, and I'm like, how am I going to do this for me? Mm-hmm. Because there was an excuse last time. I have to get better because I have to look after my brother. But the second time around was like, what? I just have to do this for me? That doesn't seem like enough.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really, I don't think like that now. I'm a raging narcissist, but like back then it was, you know, I think so low of myself. It's like, yeah, who am I doing this for?
But even people who maybe don't have a negative self-image, when a big loss like that sometimes leaves a big hole. Like, I don't know what my values are. Nothing makes sense now. People who have a strong faith that guides them through their life will often say like, well, I'm in a crisis of faith now because how could this thing have happened? Especially if you had a loved one who maybe suffered through a protracted illness or really had a difficult time at the end, you had to watch that. How could this have happened? And they lose the framework. You mentioned a framework before. Suddenly the framework that I have built into my life that I live by just crumbles. And now I'm a little bit aimless and I don't know where my values are. I don't know who I am anymore. That's going to happen. And that's going to make things even harder. I feel like we just keep coming back to like, this is going to be hard because it is, it is, but it's a natural process that's difficult to go through.
It's hard. And sometimes you'll be hit by multiple waves. I know the question stated that her father was unwell and, you know, we hope that whatever happened there, that you're okay. And you're, you know, we're thinking of you, you know, but also assure you that you can cope and you are coping. And if you're listening now, it shows us, everyone, that you are coping.
Yeah.
You may feel like crap. That's normal. You know, you're not going to go back to square one. There's no hidden realm of anxiety that you're yet to explore, you know, because this has pushed you over the edge. You're just going to feel like crap and you have a fear of fear. Keep things simple. You've got this.
And that resensitization, she did mention that you've mentioned it. Of course, why wouldn't you be? Like, we know this already. For people who are even fully recovered from anxiety disorders, when big things happen in their life, you know, I always use the sagging metaphor and analogy. We sag. Our flexibility sags. We get a little more rigid. We get a little bit less resilient. We get a little bit shorter tempered. Like, that happens. And a lot of people will find, especially in the OCD community, hear it all the time. Like, my OCD flared again after I went through a divorce or my dog died or I was laid off from my job. Or whatever. Yeah, that happens. It's normal. So here it's normal too.
that stress jug as well, isn't it? Right. I love the stress jug. It's great. Like sometimes our stress jug fills up slowly. Sometimes it's been 3/4 full for a long time and then a little bit of stress tips it over. Yep. Sometimes you can have absolutely nothing in your stress jug. I mean, that's impossible, but absolutely nothing in your stress jug.
Yeah.
And then wham. Our parents become unwell.
Exactly. Bang. It gets filled instantly and boils over. That's part of life too.
Yeah. And the key here is not to be like, well, how do I empty it? No. I use the analogies because to conceptualize what's happening. Mm-hmm. You can cope if it overflows.
Yeah.
I just use the analogy to explain why it's happening. So if you're in the bath having a panic attack because you've recently lost someone or whatnot or whatever, then, my jug's overflowing. This makes sense. Because as creatures, we're inquisitive, we want to fix, we want to work stuff out. Mm-hmm. As we know with this, with anxiety disorders, no. You know, I now know why. I know what this is. I can leave this alone, let this pass, let this particular trigger pass. Mm-hmm. And then in the terms of grief, when I've calmed down a bit, whatever, I'm going to take some time to let some other intense emotions in.
Yeah. I'm supposed to feel like this now, but you know, it's so tempting for us to be like, oh no, I'm feeling very strong anxiety again. And maybe haven't for a while. So therefore I must be relapsed. Like, no. I know why I'm feeling these things. It's okay. Like I'm not supposed to have techniques to prevent me from having big reactions to big things in my life. That's not fair. It's not being fair to yourself. That's tough. Let's talk about for a minute, like coming out the other side of that. What does that even mean? You know, so when you say like it changes you, there's that thing where even the big, and I know it doesn't feel like it now, especially at the beginning after a huge loss and you had an anxiety disorder on top of that. Like how am I ever going to get through this? But you do. And part of that is every experience becomes part of our narrative, right? So working it through means I incorporate this experience. This is even part of trauma therapy, really. Like you got to put that experience, it has to become part of your story, right? So you got to go through what you go through. And at the other side, at the risk of ridiculous, like silver lining platitudes that aren't going to land for anybody who's in the thick of it, the experience becomes part of who you are. You take it with you. The memories of that loved one come with you. You know, and it just becomes part of who you are. You have to incorporate it into your life story. That's how you come out the other end. It's not like, oh, I just have to wait for the pain to go away. Yeah, it does. I have to go after the feelings to go away. It goes away because we incorporate the experience into our narrative. They become part of who we are then. Not in a bad way, in a good way, a healthy way. That's how we go through these things.
Which requires time. Mm-hmm. I know this time's the greatest healer, unless you have chronic OCD. Yeah. But time's the greatest healer. I want to say, by the way, with the chronic OCD, not just time and psychoeducation and the right approach. Yeah. We don't just wait for it. You know, oh, well, maybe if I just keep waiting, then these compulsions will disappear. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
But with grief, time, the brain has been given a fireball and it's created little fires everywhere. And it's just going to take time to just extinguish them, sweep them up and file them away in the nice, in a nice orderly fashion. And that's what happens there. It's interesting. You won't get the acute feelings. I don't get the acute stabs of grief anymore. Mm. I get a sadness when I think about it, but it's a sadness that doesn't feel cumbersome. What really helps as well, I can't believe I've not mentioned it, talking about it, going to a counselor, just talk about your loved ones. That literally helps the brain process it as well.
Yeah.
About how the magnitude of it. And don't struggle on your own with it.
It's funny because it's such an opposite message. When we're talking specifically about an anxiety disorder, we don't want to encourage, keep talking about how you feel, because that's the problem there. But in this situation, we do have to talk about how we feel. It's part of the process.
Because grief is not an anxiety disorder.
That's exactly right. It's not a disorder. Like, it's not a pathology. We don't treat it. You just go through it. So this could be really confusing. If you're in the middle of recovery and also dealing with grief, sometimes you're going to really just talk about how you feel. And that might also include the anxiety sort of like horning in on that. Oh, and by the way, I feel dizzy today and I feel nauseous today. Okay, what are you going to do? Like the best you can that day. Your anxiety disorder is going to chime in and try to ride the wagon of talking about your feelings. Let it. There's nothing you can do. There's no perfect recovery. There's no perfect grieving. Just do the best you can.
Yep. And this applies. Don't be surprised when there's anniversaries or you go to a certain place or whatever. Of course, that's going to give you a lot of emotion and stress and whatnot. You don't avoid those.
Yeah.
Just go with whatever feeling is there and let the brain, let you as a person process it as well.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to let the brain do it with time and self-compassion. Like I lost my dad like a year and a half after my brother. In horrendous circumstances as well. And just like, I remember as someone with OCD and a perfectionistic tendencies to recovery would be like, well, how do I do it? Do I grieve my dad in the morning? And then what's the process of grieving my brother in the afternoon? And and then I've got this anxiety disorder. And then what if I've got a, and then the health anxiety was kicking off. And there's another thing as well, grief. Expect health, stuff like health anxiety to rear its head. It's your threat response. It will use grief. This is where anxiety could be a bully and OCD is a bully. It will use grief as ammunition.
Yeah.
It will take things that have happened in your inner circle and be like, see?
They do happen. This does happen.
This does happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we just ignore it. It's like the probability has not changed.
Right. Exactly. It's a tough one. I think one of the core principles that you can hang your hat on if you can, and this does apply in both anxiety disorders and grief, is the intensity of what you feel in any given moment is not a predictor of your ability to be okay in 10 minutes or 10 weeks or 10 years.
Oh, that's a good one.
The intensity of how you feel does not predict your ability to get through the feeling. It's just intense. Just is.
That's such a good, yeah. Yeah, that's the line.
Yeah, because we feel like, well, I feel so strongly that I must draw a conclusion from the intensity of this feeling. Must mean I won't cope. It's going to break me. I'll never get better. No, it just means right now in this minute, you feel very intensely for known reasons.
Yeah, that's so important. Well, I might play that back later. I like that. And then say I came up with it.
What's the timestamp on that? 27. I'm going to post it on social media so you can't steal it.
I'm gonna come out underneath it. I'm so glad that you were listening to me this morning.
You're gonna AI yourself over my voice.
Yeah.
Anyway, tough spot for sure.
And we appreciate this, and we dedicate this episode to your late mother, and to anyone else listening who's lost someone either recently or far in the past, someone where you feel a bit empty. No matter what that grief is, you know, it could be a close family member or a pet or someone like that where you feel that grief, you know, try not to sweep it under the same rug as an anxiety disorder. It does need to be treated. Bring it along with you, but try not to techniqueify or, you know, process. It will process in its own time, you know, just take it with you and let the brain get to work in the background.
And if it means that your anxiety disorder recovery has to take a back seat on some days or for a few hours or even for a couple of weeks, okay. There's no way to force, I must also be recovering while I'm grieving. Maybe you will. On some days you might combine them. And if you don't know which one you're doing at any given moment, that's also okay. Am I recovering now or am I grieving? I don't know. You don't know. It's okay.
It doesn't matter now. We don't need to keep quantifying.
Right.
And referring to these metrics of success. It's okay. Just chill out. Just exist.
It's okay for somebody to experience a major loss in their life and for that to sort of like put the brakes on for any human being. That's why we have things like extended leave from work. Like nobody questions that. If you lose somebody and you're off from work for 2 or 3 weeks, no one would question, why is this person not at work? They would know why, because it's part of the human experience. So if your recovery slows down for a while, okay. Doesn't mean it's going to end.
Yeah, and also see that resensitization as part of the process. Horrible things happen in life, including grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Don't misinterpret you being resensitized as going backwards or in reverse. No, this is part of it. So reframe it. I've been banging on about reframes on my social media this week, and it's reframe. It's like, okay, I could deal. I desensitize myself to my daily routine and day-to-day stuff when I was diagnosed or when I developed an anxiety disorder. Bam, I was hit with a double whammy. I'm resensitized again. So now's an opportunity to show myself and prove to my brain that I can desensitize myself even when tricky things happen in life. Do not make the mistake of being like, oh no, I'm back at square one. Oh my God, my anxiety is so bad. I could only cope when I was doing it. No, it's part of the journey.
Yeah, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, because so many people see it as pass and fail. Oh, I'm resensitized again. I'm going backwards. Absolutely not.
No, yeah, you're right. You're not. Recovery from an anxiety disorder does not mean somehow or other you only have good days from there on out. It's just not. That's not realistic. It's not possible.
No, absolutely not. So, thank you for sending that in. And maybe we'll talk more about grief. Get a grief expert on. I'm certainly not one.
Yep.
And maybe we could talk about the psychoeducation behind grief as well, which would be really interesting. So, yeah, we'll do another grief episode with an expert on at a later date.
Yeah.
As always, we like to celebrate the community and have a Q&A. What have we got, Drew? What have we got in there?
We have an audio Q&A. It's also a big life event. This is an audio, not an audio Q&A. It's an audio did it anyway. It has to do with actually a wedding. So how about we hear that one and then we'll go on.
Okay.
So let's do it.
Hi, Josh and Drew. My name is Jamie and you can use my name. First, thank you both so much for everything you do and have done for the community. I've been following you both for years and this podcast is just one of my favorites. And so wanted to share a pretty big did it anyway with you all. 3 weeks ago, I got married, which was an exposure in and of itself, just lots of emotions, a full weekend full of events, dinners, obviously the day of, you're busy the whole day and not really a lot of ability to escape or run or hide. And then just yesterday, we got back from a week-long honeymoon, which is like, I can't even believe I'm saying that. It involved a 3.5-hour flight one way to a place I've never been with 7 days of being out of my safe places, my home, my bed, my animals, restaurants I've never been to. I just not that long ago felt like I couldn't even sit in a drive-through line or eat out without being in sheer panic. So it's really shocking to me that I was able to get on a plane for 3.5 hours is just like mind-boggling. And the whole last weeks and months were not without, you know, stress and high anxiety, panic attacks. There were plenty leading up to and during the honeymoon. But I'm just so proud of myself that I was able to do something that I remember a year ago, I didn't know if I would be able to even have a wedding and invite a bunch of people and have a big celebration or go on a week-long vacation. And I did. So just wanted to share that with you all. You've helped me so much. And it just means.
Good job. Yeah,
that's
sorry.
Really good.
Your audio faded out, Jamie. If you're listening for some reason in your recording, you just droop faded out at the end. So it didn't end very gracefully, but great job and thank you for sending it in.
Dropped it into a river as it was just falling slowly away.
That's exactly. I had to amplify and amplify and I couldn't amplify anymore. So sorry, Jamie.
Yeah, no, brilliant. That's so good and challenging. It reminded me of what you said before about anxiety. Don't try to draw conclusions by what anxiety is presenting to you now.
Yep.
And you proved it wrong. You got on the plane, you did this, you went to a new place. Well done. That's excellent.
Yeah. It's a good example too of how even happy things are stressful. Happy stress is stress.
Happy stress is definitely stress. Yeah. You know, like recording this podcast.
Oh, so stressful. Every time he comes on camera, I'm like, oh, how am I going to do this? No, I'm kidding.
I've got to did it anyway.
Let's do it.
It's from Jen from Canada. Hi, Josh and Drew. Notice she used Josh first there. I mean,
Jen,
I don't want to bring attention to it, but I entirely want to bring attention to it. Big fans of the podcast. Wanted to share my did it anyway moment. First off, I have GAD adjustment disorder and recently discovered that I have OCPD. So big decision making isn't my thing, but I'm working through it. So back to why I'm messaging you. My big did it anyway is the fact that I said yes to a new job. My current job is very toxic and my manager is very micromanaging and controlling. So when this opportunity came up, It took a long time for me to say yes or even believe someone else believed in me, thanks to my current situation. Even though I am afraid and frustrated, I did it anyway and said yes to a new opportunity. I'm a mixture of proud and scared because anxiety and the fear of the unknown. Anyways, thank you for your support and knowledge as it's really helped in my anxiety journey. Stay well.
Oh, very good.
Love that. Brilliant. Leaning into the unknown.
Yeah. Right now, every boss in Canada that listens to Disordered, which of course is millions of them, that has an employee named Jen, is on the warpath right now. Hopefully Jen already left her job since she now added her boss as horrible.
Yeah, there's so many Jens being called into the office. Jen, are you leaving?
Right. Am I horrible? Am I a horrible narcissist? That's a great job. I love the ability to hold space for two things to be true at the same time. I'm excited and afraid at the same time. Imagine that. Human beings having multiple experiences at once. Who knew?
Love it. Love it. Should we have a question?
Yeah, let's ask. Let's do it. What do you got?
Here's one. Hi there. I just had a question about the what if part of anxiety. Lately, I've been getting triggered a lot by almost comparing myself to other people. For example, I'll see a post on social media of someone talking about depression, and I'll start getting overwhelmed with fear, thinking, what if that turns out to be me? So I guess the question comes down to, how would you go about not getting triggered as much, / not comparing yourself to others? Apologies if this has been answered, but I've been listening to a fair few podcasts and hadn't heard anything about this. That's from Dan.
Mm. Thanks, Dan. Good question. What do you think? How do you not get triggered?
What I'm hearing from the question is something we have spoke about in the past, and that's depression versus fear of depression. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're reading these people. What if this person who's in a situation that's tricky, and I've got an anxiety disorder, what if I lose control and end up like this person? It's very similar to the depression, fear of depression question. It's you don't avoid triggers, but at the same time, the rule is do what non-anxious you would do. Would non-anxious you be scrolling through social media, listening to countless stories of mental health and depression? I know non-anxious me wouldn't. What about you, Drew?
Yeah, I would not. But in that situation, the trigger says, you better do something about this. That's a hard story to hear. Now I'm afraid that it might happen to me. Okay, all reasonable, because anybody might have that reaction. Now I have to do something about this discomfort. No, you don't. So the way you learn to not be triggered is to go ahead and be triggered because you can't not be, and then start to react to it in a different way. Yeah, that's I'm scared of depression right now. What else? Next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just it's not a thing that you have to go away and fix at the drawing board. It's just, yeah, I'm at the moment, I'm anxious, and my threat response is suggesting to me that this video I've seen is a threat because it is a wild premonition that this could be me.
Yeah.
Which is now leading me to compulsions where I'm checking my mood, checking things, checking everything, avoiding. And suddenly I am going to feel different and I am going to relate to the person I've just seen on the video because I'm literally spent days comparing and compulsively checking. Watch out for the comparison compulsion. It's sneaky. You think you're doing it to protect yourself, but you're actually keeping yourself in a heightened state of awareness. Yeah.
Notice when you think you're doing something, but if I think about it and I ask about it and I read about it, then I'm doing something. No, you're not. It does nothing. That's literally doing nothing. So I always like to use the smoke detector analogy. Like twice a year or whatever, when the clocks change, you always get those like public service announcements. This is a good time to change the batteries in your smoke detector. Oh, that's right. I need to be worried about my smoke detector. Now I can do something, actually change the batteries, and then I'm done. I actually did a thing to address that worry. Now I'm done. Googling about depression and checking yourself. And I know people who will literally like download like the Beck depression inventory and give it to themselves as a test. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just let yourself be afraid of depression and go along best you can.
Yeah. You can do that. Great advice. Great advice. Yeah. I don't think we've got time for any more.
Yeah, we're about
to squeeze one. Yeah, we're about time. Let's not get carried away. No one's
Try not to make it too long. So
But I'll save them for the next episode. Thank you all for tuning in. Also, a big congratulations to my co-host, Drew. We've reached 500,000 downloads of Disordered, which we will rant and cheer about more in the next episode. And that's all thanks to you listening at home. So thank you so much.
Yeah, that's a big number. Thank you so much, guys. We appreciate it.
It's just you and I listening to it back.
Do you know how many times I had to replay to get to 250,000? A lot.
No, the key is to buy 5,000 devices and put them in a warehouse and just keep playing it over and over again.
Farm in China listening to us on repeat. It's like, we only have 4 listeners, but thank you, everybody. It does make it more fun to do the podcast when you know that a lot of people are listening, and we appreciate it. And all the lovely reviews we get. Thank you so much for that. So,
And final words, thank you once again to the person who sent in that question. And we wish you all the best. And just know we're here every Friday. And keep going. You've got this.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back next week.